This is Poetry on the Move. In this episode, we talk to Dan Disney about his latest books, Either Orpheus and Report from the Border. We hear poetry from Rupert Lloydell. And we talk to Paul Munden about the forthcoming Poetry on the Move Festival happening at the University of Canberra in September. But first, poetry from Rupert Lloydell. Rupert Lloydell is the author of many solo and collaborative books of poetry. He is a senior lecturer in English and creative writing at Falmouth University in the UK and editor of Stride magazine.
Other versions. In some versions, King Arthur lives under the hill and will ride again to sort just about everything out. Elsewhere, there's a hunt that charges across the sky, ghosts half immersed in water that's risen since they were alive, and groans and howls and whispers in the echo chamber of communal dreams. England is dying, but will be kept alive as a museum for international visitors, intrigued by a nation who rejected the future and fled into the past, numbing themselves with dreams and out-of-date fairy tales. Other versions of the same lies.
We'll hear more from Rupert later. Dan Disney teaches with Songyang University's English Literature Program in Seoul. His collections of poetry include And Then When The, Mannequin's Guide to Utopias, Report from a Border, co-devised with John Warwicker, and Either Orpheus. He is co-editor with Kit Kellen of Writing to the Wire, an anthology of poetry responding to the dehumanization of people seeking asylum in Australia. Dan is speaking here with Paul Hetherington.
Can you say a bit about what you're trying to do in the book? This is the book Either Orpheus, with the Villanelle form, and also the extraordinary range of cultural and literary references that you incorporate. I mean, you seem to be in discussion, dialogue, debate with kind of received ideas and cultural theory and quite deep discussions with key literary figures who have influenced you, I assume.
Well, I mean, I guess I'd throw to Levitov and reverse her idea and say that content is never more than a revelation of form. So these are sort of, these are revelations that happened usually immediately after reading in the cultural theorists and et cetera that you were alluding to. What am I up to formally? Perhaps attempting to synthesize a few different imperatives or modes from across the 20th century, in particular the language school, if you like, with all the political and radical meaninglessnesses that that they bring to the table. Without wanting to abandon my imperative to communicate lyrically with my readers. And the Villanelle is such a beautiful splicing and synthesizing of narratives and of potential new ways of arrival in that final two lines. So I suppose the way that I could best talk about what I'm doing is to talk about the process. And the process was simply acting as someone who was very selectively sampling, not actively with a sort of furrowed brow and actively conscious analytical mind, but something a bit more mysterious than that. Allowing for the echoes and the sort of the spectral shadows to sort of creep into a line. After reading, you know, Picatois, Berger, the many others that are in this book, a lot of Cage, a little bit of Levitov, but from across the 20th century, basically. And then just sort of standing back from the line and seeing if it was going to hold or not. And then reshaping and rechanging the first and the third line until something viable announced itself. It was essentially a process that was a heuristic process based in epiphany. The texts don't talk deeply to their origins, but they're texts in their own right. Because I suppose what the book is ultimately trying to do is question the hierarchies, the schema, the range of discourses that are available to us in the early 21st century, and say, where are we? Where have we arrived? The way that Rilke, I think, was asking that question 100 years ago so beautifully. Hence the homaging, I suppose, to Rilke. Instead of sonnets to Orpheus, this is either Orpheus, they're not sonnets, they're villanelles. The villanelle doesn't move in a circular, but it sort of suggests or implies a circular narrative that circles back on itself and still manages to step forward. I wonder where we're stepping into in terms of where we are in 2016 with the very many problems that we have globally and no real answers, I would say, in terms of how to manage those problems. So the book is an ethical questioning, ultimately. What are the limits of capital? Are there any? Ask gentlemen transporting veneers of culture in large sheets on prime movers. Stockholders pointing tasers at non-yielding personae. While tax collectors wave at drivers transforming vitality into wages. Stomachs humming gastronomic anthems toward next stop, where slaves, slicked with tuck shop grease, are not asking, what? Are the limits of capital? Are there any? Piping product down tubes into output moulds and onto trays for mum and dad investors, square-eyeing rapture, and live-firing conversation in hungry packets of data. Blank as sarcophagi, their screens noting reports bearing burdens of further unbearability. The market slide crossing a table of a threshold of McTables. If any, what are the limits of capital? The day real, homogeneous as sickbay and all the androids vacuuming. The wear and tear of highway motels where the worn and torn go to quickly. Play the games that yield an hour's entertainment. And while junior execs meet in alleyways to snort for next ideas, fetishists sing the same creed and tie difficult knots around one another. What would be the limits? Are there many? They're asking. Subjunctive and undressing, the new next yield of non-persons.
You're playing around visually as well in a kind of sense of poetry, I think, is the materiality of poetry. And you've got a book, as well as either Orpheus, you've published this book called Report from a Border, which, with John Warwicker, which is a really fascinating book and very interesting in terms of typography and layout. And perhaps you could talk a little bit about that aspect of your work as well.
I'm really interested in design. I'm interested in shapes. I'm interested in what Plato has to say about shapes, you know, the Platonic forms, you know, these sort of preternatural unities that seem imminent and transcendental as well. I'm interested in those ideas, not as a mode of getting to that possible response of where to go next, but simply as sort of an echo that seems to sit, and again, that Levitovian sort of idea of those unities that just seem to sit as if, you know, organic forms. So I think in as much as the sound must seem an echo to the sense, you know, Pope's brilliant aphoristic idea that won't ever stop resonating, for me the form also must somehow can present the opportunity to connect with the theme. So I'm interested in typography in those senses, which where the poem is not just appealing to the ear, but also perhaps to the eye. So, and I'm not talking about images there. I'm not talking about concrete poetry either. It's something a little more complex than how do you say it in French? Il pute, rain. Yeah. So the calligrams. I mean, which are interesting, but 100 years old as well. So in the 21st century, with the means of production thrown into the hands of the masses, I'm really interested in mediating formally the things that I'm trying to, the imperatives that I'm trying to bring to the table thematically. So, and the work with that I was doing with John Warwicker in Report from the Border, which is essentially the arrival of three archetypal characters in a dystopian setting, and then the end game that happens as a result of that. That was a far more, for me, myopic experience, actually. Yeah. So, you know, I love collaborations, but I don't feel like I've got the control that I have when I work alone. And I love, because of course, as a poet, I'm neurotic. I love I love to control as much as I can and open up space where you don't know what's going to happen next, but those arrivals are wholly your own. Collaboratively, something different's happening in this book, the Square Book Report from a Border, which I find to be incredibly pleasing, but a far less comfortable process. Nothing mystical, it's like, hey, have an aspirin. The crazy breeders uttering injunctions like painted blue jays. When they get to town, nobody sleeps until they're gone. Willy-nilly, as divine accidents amid the particularity of things. And inert, as an absurdly large rule, they are nothing mystical, like, hey, have a complex insecurity, categorical with basic speech, this awkward climate of hierarchies confused with delight. When they get to town, nobody sleeps until they're gone, and nobody enters the yes-no dualism of I don't know. Underfoot, the ground trickles with cats, trees, lost histories. It's nothing mystical. It's like, hey, have a programmatic soul. The smiling back like bad paintings or a hands-on cure. Rehearsing with ginger ale and, when they get to town, nobody sleeps until they're gone. Casual as cut moonlight. And lonely as a surgical experience. Pleasantly moist. Nothing mystical. It's like, hey, have an aspirin. When they get to town, nobody sleeps until they're gone.
It's a very different book from either Orpheus, but it's got some connections, including the way in which it seems both books seem to be kind of pursuing ideas and kind of certain tropes of language in a kind of discontinuous, sometimes almost disconnected way, but you know, throughout, but the strands do intertwine periodically. There are certain kinds of joinings among the sort of sense of general sense of fracture or discontinuity, and I think that's really quite fascinating. Do you think, I mean, perhaps this is where we could finish. I mean, do you think fracture and fragmentation and continuity and discontinuity, those kinds of tropes are central to the way you're thinking about your poetry?
I think that one of the ways that my poetry manifests is aphoristically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so what better form to adopt if I'm thinking in aphorisms than a villanelle?
Yeah.
And this book that I collaborated on with John was actually a straight up and down narrative at the beginning, which so not so much prose split into lines, but I mean so real poetry. And there are some sonnets in there, some very improper sonnets, but sonnets nonetheless in terms of forms. But he interrupted those and shut them down a little bit. And I was thankful to him for doing that, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting. The interruption is perhaps a lovely way of summarizing what I mentioned. Perhaps we could finish by you could read a little bit from this book.
Oh, see, that's the thing. How do you read this book? And this book also doesn't have page numbers, and there are reasons for that. Yeah. You know, in terms of, I suppose what I'm asking with that very simple gesture is, you know, where are we? I'm also trying to shut down learned systems of finding our way through a narrative or an idea or a book. Mm. Yeah. So where did that poem come in the book? There's no page numbers for me to find it. You know, it speaks to the idea of, you know, how did I get to where I am in my life? How do we get to where we are in 2016, et cetera? So this book, this other book, Report from a Border, problematizes and interrupts our reading in terms of presents a range of different ways of interacting with the pages in terms of verso, recto, et cetera. So, all right, I'll read it one way in which it can be read. Places the blade to his cheek, carves down. We have to shut this philosopher king up or off. The dock, a scurf of stubble and breeze. Do you really want the propagation of these types? Jaffa nicks his chin, flexes across sunshaft. When'd you last eat meat? His neck a knot and me nod, nodding like my head's just sprung from a box.
That was Dan Disney. His latest book, Either Orpheus, is published by UWA Press, and his collaboration with John Warriker, Report from a Border, is published by Light Trap Press. Now, some more from Rupert Loydell.
Hidden. I am wondering if the Annunciation Angel will speak to me today, or be silent in the museum, silenced even. How does paint speak down the centuries, flaking from a forgotten wall or crumbling in a shadowed chapel, overlooked by tourists and guides? There are hidden angels everywhere in Tuscany. If you find one, keep quiet and speak of it only to yourself. Let meaning turn to whisper. And this is called Fra Angelico's Pronunciation, and I stole the title from my daughter, who made the phrase up without realising she had. Because the painter always lisped, so did the angel. And Mary, when nervous, had a bit of a stutter. It was an awkward moment, but we forget the details and let ourselves be dazzled by Gabriel's painted wings, the pinks and blue and gold. Alone and in shock after hearing his message, Mary tried to still herself, to ponder these things in a ha-ha-ha art. Taken up. It is the loveliest of mornings. Life in the here and now begins with some sort of visitation and a desire for affirmation, the ideas of a well-defined reward in heaven. Taking our cue from the liquid interchangeability of colour and light, we note that Mary is so taken up with God, she fails to notice the muscular young man hovering in her room. By focusing on the inner life, she has missed the moment, an opportunity for transcendence. Her heaven may be imaginative rather than something literal. Her Annunciation not historical, but cultural. A folded paper note passed along the back row of class under the eyes of Joseph and God. The mouth of the imaginary angel is closed. The human body is a house, open to the world around. Heaven, a product of communal desire.
Paul Munden is the program manager at the International Poetry Studies Institute at the University of Canberra. Here he talks about the highlights of the poetry festival, Poetry on the Move, being held at the University of Canberra in early September.
Thanks for coming, Paul. This is the second year of the Poetry on the Move Festival, and a centrepiece of the festival from last year was a couple of international poets in residence. Who's coming this year?
Well, this year we have Simon Armitage, a poet from the UK who has recently been appointed as the Oxford Professor of Poetry, an outstanding poet in my opinion. And it's interesting when you're choosing a poet to come from overseas, one hopes that they're going to be a name that people know. And interestingly, you know, some of the major names don't travel as easily as one might think. I think Simon is a real exception to this. I think he's very well known all over the place and very deservedly so. So he'll be here for the second week of the festival doing a number of events. He'll be running a writing workshop, doing a reading, and we'll also be showing his film called Black Roses, about the killing of a young teenager in 2007, and Simon will be there to have a discussion about that film after the screening. The second poet in residence comes from New Zealand, and that's Tusiata Avia, and she is primarily a performance poet. She'll also be running a workshop, performing at our final poetry symposium, but also she's going to be doing a headline act at the Canberra Poetry Slam.
One of the other highlights of the program this year, I notice, is a panel on poetry publishing. You've managed to attract a group of significant publishers or significant Australian publishers to this year's event.
Indeed. I think that is quite a difference to last year's festival, which I don't think featured publishers in a major way at all. This year, we've got a really good representation of some of the top publishers in the country. And I think that will be of real interest, not only to poets that are well published, but also to aspiring poets, to know exactly what's going on in the publishing scene.
A lot of the program is scheduled here at the University of Canberra. I see you've got an event with the National Portrait Gallery.
For the central weekend, we're going to various other locations, and I'm very excited to be going to the National Portrait Gallery. And for the event that we're staging there, to be linked very much to the whole business of biography. And we have Jeff Page, who's recently written a biography about Sir Charles Ryan in verse. Also Jessica Wilkinson, who's written two notable verse biographies of Marion Davies and also of the composer Percy Grainger. And someone she works with at RMIT in Melbourne, Benjamin Laird, who's doing some very interesting work, not only doing this rather unusual thing of writing poetic biography, but also producing it in adventurous electronic formats. So I think that's going to be a very interesting event.
One of the highlights for me from last year was the Poetry Symposium, which was a day of discussion around a particular theme. What's the theme for this year?
This year's theme is poetry and place. Simon Armitage is going to give the keynote talk, putting poetry in its place. We also have another poet visiting from the UK, from the Orkneys, Pamela Besant, who's also running a workshop, actually. She'll be talking about that, and her workshop relates to poetry and landscape. We also have three poets from Singapore. Alvin Pung, who was a star at last year's festival, he's coming back with two colleagues from Singapore. They'll be involved in the symposium and, in fact, at another event where they'll be focusing on poetry as it is combined with other art forms. And, in fact, they themselves are multi-talented in that respect. So that should be extremely interesting.
The final day of the poetry you've called a celebration of poetry. What's happening there?
Well, I think we just wanted to differentiate from the symposium at which there will be readings, yes, but also academic papers. On the final day, it really is just going to be concentrating on fun and the pure enjoyment of poetry. We will have readings. We'll have Tussiata doing a performance, an excerpt, I believe, from her one-woman show, Wild Dogs Under My Skirt is the title. And that day will culminate in the presentation of the various University of Canberra Poetry Prizes, the big one that has now run for two previous years, so is in its third year, the Vice-Chancellor's International Poetry Prize. And all the judges will be reading from their work. Simon Armitage, again, is the head judge this year. But we also have the Young Poets Awards, which were awarded last year for the first time, sponsored by the Dean of the Faculty of Arts and Design here. And for the very first time, a Poetry Health Prize, which has been sponsored by the Faculty of Health Dean. So we're really looking forward to all those prize announcements. And of course, at this stage, we have absolutely no idea who's won.
That was Paul Munden from IPSI. Poetry on the Move is happening from the 6th to the 16th of September at the University of Canberra. More details are available from the IPSI website, ipsi.org.au. This has been Poetry on the Move. I'd like to thank our guests, Dan Disney, Rupert Loydell, and Paul Munden. This podcast is made possible by IPSI, the International Poetry Studies Institute, and the Centre for Creative and Cultural Research, Faculty of Arts and Design at the University of Canberra.